and they've got a bucket in the corner for the bathroom, and they have no running water and no kitchen. They have to cook outside. I mean, it's crazy when you go and you see this, and you see it in real life. I mean, the pictures are tough, but to stand there and experience it is, it's just overwhelming. To feel that and to smell that and to just be a part of it is just amazing. And we have all sorts of poverty in our world, and so as a church, as the church, I believe that we're called to be a part of helping with that. We may say, hey, you know what? We don't have any food in the refrigerator. There's just nothing here to eat. Anybody got teenagers? My teenagers are all the time, Dad, there's nothing here to eat. And I open up the cabinet and stuff's like falling out. You know, the refrigerator's packed. And so we might say, hey, we don't have anything to eat. But then there are people who are just, they're hoping for a bag of rice and some flour so they can survive for the rest of the month. And so that goes on in our world. Poverty is real. Whether it's that extreme or whether it's just somebody who's been laid off and is unemployed and just struggling to make ends meet, there is real poverty in our world, and it's all real. And so the question is, how do we empower those who are poor to rise above that? How do we help them get beyond that? More than just dropping in and giving them a momentary relief, how do we help them beyond that? Matthew 25, Jesus tells a parable of what it's going to be like when he returns, and he's going to separate people out, and he's going to talk to those that belong to him, those who've made a decision to accept him as Savior, and he's going to say to them, you know, that that you've when I was hungry, you fed me, and when I was thirsty, you gave me drink. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I didn't have any place to lay, you gave me a place. And he's going to talk about those things. And then the people are going to look at him and say, but when did I do that? And here's how he answered that. In Matthew 25:40, it says, whenever you did this for one of the least of these brothers or sisters of mine, you did it for me. See, when we help somebody, and when we're able to be a part of empowering them to rise above poverty, and when we're able to get them out of that situation, then there's something important there. I mean, just think about it. And when you're, you know, we've driven by the guy on the side of the street with a "We'll work for food" sign, who, if you offered him a job, he wouldn't work for food. I mean, let's be honest. So we've experienced that. But then we've also, you know, I don't know about you, but I've walked down the street and the guy comes out and sprays off my windshield and cleans it for me because he's really willing to work for something. Might not be a lot of work, but it's, man, he's not standing there just hoping I'll give him. He's earning it. And so we wrestle with this in our own conscience of do I help him or not help him? Am I helping somebody that really needs help? You know, and we begin to pour off all these, you know, stereotypes on the people. And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about today, how do we empower people to rise above it? Because I think one of the things that we get stuck in is what is poverty? And we're going to get to that in a second. But when we talk about helping Jesus, when we give to those, when we're willing to help somebody, it's amazing that we're able to see this picture of really helping Jesus himself rather than just that person. Proverbs 19:17 says, if you help the poor, you are lending to the Lord. And it goes on to say that he'll even repay you for that. That's a pretty cool promise that he gives us, that if we'll help people, that we're helping him. Then there's this powerful couple of verses in 1 John that there's just this power to it when you read it. And it for me, it just silences me. Like, I can't speak after it because it takes me to this place of really, what do I do and how involved am I? Verse 1 John chapter 3, verse 17. If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth. Man, for me, that one grabs me. Do I? Sometimes I think even that we take the pity too far, but we pity him, but we're not willing to do anything about it. But do we even acknowledge that there are people who are struggling? Have we become so desensitized to it because we think they just don't want to work or don't want to earn it that we just don't help anybody? Where do we find ourselves? And I think we have to answer this question is the love of God in me? And if the love of God is in me, if I'm a follower of Jesus, then I have to look at poverty much differently than maybe I have been looking at it. Let's wrap our heads around this thought of poverty. What is it? In the book, When Helping Hurts, the authors state this interesting fact. It says that most Americans define poverty as a lack of something material. If I was to ask most of us in here, what is poverty? We would answer that it's missing something. That's people who don't have money, people who don't have houses, who don't have cars, who don't have food. We would say it was something very material, and we would kind of base everything that we do and how we approach it on that. You know, my 14-year-old thinks that we're too poor because we can't get her an iPhone 7. But I'm not talking about that poverty. I'm not talking about that lack of material stuff. I'm talking about when we see people without stuff. The interesting thing on the other hand of that, if you ask most Americans that what it is, we say it's the lack of material things. But an interesting study was done, and it went and said, asked 60,000 low-income people. It said, what is poverty to you? And it was kind of interesting because they said poverty is a mindset. That poverty, that truly poor, the ones who are really in it and experience it, they say that it's a mindset. Isn't that interesting? We totally make it something tangible, but people who are really experiencing understand that there is much more to it. That poverty is a mindset. It's a way that you think. They describe it with a deep sense of shame and feeling very ashamed, and they can't do more to get out of it. And they say it's an ongoing feeling of worthlessness. They use the word fear over and over. They use the word humiliation. The hopeless was a word. The sense of being trapped. And so they're not wishing for a backup camera on their wagon, okay? They're looking for, they're not thinking about those things that they don't have. They're thinking about where they are and how they feel about where they are. I don't know how to get out of this. I don't know what to do next. There are no options of education, and if there were, there'd be no way for them to get there. And so they feel trapped in this. And so we need to understand that to help people and encounter them and empower them, those that are struggling, we need to understand that we don't just need to give them something. We don't just need to hand over something to them. We need to help them overcome the mindset of where they are. And then as they overcome that, then they're able to begin then providing more and doing more to help themselves get out of it. We need to help them overcome this sense of hopelessness. I heard a pastor tell a story about how he took a bunch of Americans down to a Central American town, and they rolled in there, and they were ready to help. They were going to change these people and the way they live, and they were going to help them. And so they brought in, like, all these T-shirts. And they handed out T-shirts to everybody because they wanted to give something away. And so they started giving them all these T-shirts. And people were just lined up to get free T-shirts. And then what they found out was that there were three ladies in the town who made clothing for those that lived there. And now because of giving away free T-shirts, they had undermined the business of these three ladies and now had taken food off the table of their families. I mean, sometimes it's not about giving stuff away. It's about being able to help people overcome the mindset of what poverty can do to them. And so we need to be able to see what that means. and then help them in it. We can have totally good intentions, but we can end up doing more harm than good if we don't talk, if we don't really take poverty as what it is, and it's really much more than material possessions. It is a mindset that we need to help people overcome. And then, as we do that, we can then provide things to get them out. But it's got to be much more than that. It's got to be giving them things that help them come out. And then the third thing about what is poverty, the root of all poverty is brokenness. We need to be able to come to an understanding that the root of all poverty is brokenness. Now, some of you are going to say, but those people that live in those places, they just don't have anything. Well, but there is a really an overarching thing that we see that comes from poverty, that if you really take it all the way back, poverty is from the brokenness of sin. It's the brokenness of mankind. That's why people are poor, and why we have places that don't have things. It goes back to the very fall of man and what happened in that. That there is a separation from people from God, and this brokenness then leads to them to have not the things that they need. But then there's all types of brokenness when we really look at it. I mean, there's brokenness of relationships, and some of us struggle to feel like we really have things because we feel like we've lost the people that are closest to us, and we don't have those relationships. There's the brokenness with self. Some of us have a poor self-esteem, and because of that self-esteem, we're not able to rise above it and be able to accomplish the things that God created us to be able to do. There are people struggling with all types of things that keep them in this mindset of not being able to move forward and to be able to accomplish what they were created to do. So poverty goes much deeper than just, hey, I just don't have any money in my pocket. It goes much deeper than that. It goes into what a person has inside, deep within them. There's the brokenness of the people that we see who are suffering without Christ, who just don't have a relationship with Him. And I say suffering because I think that's what we do when we don't have a relationship with the one that created us. I think life becomes a suffering. It becomes a search and a longing to have something, and many times that we're unwilling to even search out what it is. And so people are kind of tuned the church out. They tune the Bible out, and they tune out the whole Jesus thing. But the reality is that's where it all begins. You could have all the material possessions in the world, but still be poor. And that's if you don't have a relationship with Christ. And so I think for us, when we realize what we have and what we have the opportunity to have, it can change our perspective on poverty and help us. That's why when Jesus rode into Nazareth, man, it was life-changing for those people. He rides in, he opens up the scroll that he's handed, and it's the writings of Isaiah. And in Luke chapter 4, verse 18, he reads this scroll to the people. He says, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor." He's talking about the poor, those without him. "He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of the sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And then a couple of verses later, it's pretty interesting. He puts down the scroll and he looks out at him and he says this. Then he began to speak to him. "The scripture you've just heard has been fulfilled this very day." Jesus says, "Listen, I'm the one who has come to proclaim freedom to the poor, to those who are prisoners, those to set those free who've been oppressed." Jesus is the answer. And he's bringing this news to the people there to be able to overcome this mindset of being poor. I love the way that he puts it. And so when we look at poverty, we need to understand that this root of brokenness is there, but Jesus came to heal that brokenness. And so maybe we can't give everybody money. Maybe we can't give everybody those material things, but we certainly can give everybody we have an opportunity, Jesus. And he can heal the poverty of their soul, the poverty that we most struggle with. So poverty is at the root of all of it is brokenness. The root of it is brokenness. And so it's more than material. It's a mindset. And Jesus is the answer to that issue. And that's got to change how we try to help and empower people who are in need. And now I'm talking about people who are financially struggling. We've got to look at how we go to them differently, because we're not just taking dollars and you know, all kinds of stuff to them and food or whatever, but we're taking the answer to their deepest question, the one that allows them to experience the most in this life. It's something that we're called to do. And we need to understand that as Jesus followers, every single one of us, every one of us, is called to be a part of this. It's not just for the people who can speak. It's not just for the people that can sing. It's not just for the people that can play music. It's not just for those who teach classes or whatever. It's for every single one of us to be a part of. And as we can come together, we will see the church do more than it's been able to do. We're called to do it. It's not something we're just invited to do. It's a calling. It's deeper. It's got to be something that pulls on us and tugs on us to want to do it, to recognize that we can go do so much together, but, you know, by providing water, we can then be able to share Jesus. By providing mosquito nets in Africa, we can then share Jesus. By doing so many things, then we get to share the word. But as we talk about this calling that we have, we need to qualify it so that we understand what it really is meant to be. Three thoughts that go with that. The first one is this: we are called to serve others, not to save others. We're called to serve others, but not to save others. It's pretty arrogant to think that we can go somewhere and be the answer to their problems. To think that just because we roll in like a bunch of, you know, I'll just put it the way that I put it for myself when I found myself in Kenya and doing it. That I rolled in there like a fat white American and thought I was going to be their savior. That I was going to bring the things that were going to totally change their life. Now, what I was thinking was the things that we had in boxes and bags. But I really did have the thing that was going to save them, that was going to change their life. But he was inside, and I wasn't carrying him around in a bag or a box. He lives within me. But I thought that I could roll in there with all of this stuff, and I could impress them, and they would be changed, and, man, life would be good for all. I think we do that quite often. We like to throw money at stuff and then say, you know what, we've made a difference. I got to tell you, I think it goes way beyond that. We've got to be able to send ourselves with it. We've got to be willing to be part of it, that we can't save others. That's Jesus' job. But we certainly can serve him. The power isn't in us. The power's in him, but he lives in us, and through that, he helps us to empower people by being his hands and his feet. You see, when we talk about serving around here, I think people just think, well, we just serve around here because that's what we're supposed to do, and it gives us something to do on Sunday morning. But the truth is what serving does here should help us be able to learn how to serve there. Serving people as they walk in the door should want to help us serve people as they walk into the door of Community Inn. Or it should help us want to serve people as we walk downtown and we see people laying in the corners of doorways and things like that. It should want us to drive us to be able to do that. So I don't just ask you to serve here because we got spots that need to be filled. Man, I mean, I could just reduce the spots. You know, we could just make it really simple. We could put a stand right there, and you walk in, you take your program out of it. Nobody's standing there smiling at you and serving you, and you just walk on by. For some, that might be okay, but I think for most of us, we love seeing a smile. We love the interaction with people, and guess what? Those who that need us to serve them outside of here love that too. And that's why we do it. It's not just because it sounds good or looks good on paper. It's because it is part of who we should be, serving and helping others. And we've got to be careful as we do take serving outside of here and as we go to people, there's a couple of words that we have to understand that help us determine what it is. And it's really the same way that we should serve other people. There's a word called relief. And relief is this immediate, this temporary type of help that we give during and after a crisis. It's something that we do for the moment that helps cover an immediate need. But then long term, it's probably not going to be extremely helpful. The people in Texas, listen, they need some relief today. They have been overwhelmed. I mean, can you imagine what that would be like if we had in Stanley County like 21 inches of rain? You know, those of you on the lake, whew, love you, but y'all are on a hill. I'm glad because y'all would need that hill. Because, I mean, it would overwhelm our community. And it's not impossible for that to happen to us. So we need to be thinking about how can we help those people immediately. There's great ways to help through the Baptist men and their disaster relief. I mean, that's what it does. It's already in place for us to be able to come alongside and help to help temporary needs. But then there's this other word that we need to understand, and it's called restoration. And restoration goes way beyond it. It's a long-term relationship to rebuild wholeness. So we can come in and give a bunch of water and a bunch of clothes in a situation, but what does that do down the road? Restoration is when we come in and we say, you know what, we're going to help you rebuild that. And we're going to help you get beyond that. And we're going to give you ways to help this situation be better for you. We have to be able to give both whenever we do it. It's part of serving. And we need to be looking for ways to be able to do that. The second thing is this, that we're called to relate with people, not rescue people. We're called to relate with people, but not rescue people. One of the kind of interesting things is this, that those who are struggling are not projects for us to help. I think sometimes that's where we get stuck in this mindset of, well, they're a project. I need this project to do. I need this. And we can't ever see it as just a project to do, but we've got to see them as people we love. If we're going to neighbor the way we're supposed to, those people need to be loved by us, not just rescued by us, not just us to come in and provide a very temporary resource. We've got to be willing to build relationships with people that go beyond just saving them for the moment. We've got to be able to help. I've read a story of a church who went into a low-income neighborhood, and they went in there with this grand idea. They had raised all this money, and they went in, and in the middle of this low-income neighborhood, they built this fabulous playground, mulched it up really nice, and man, it was just beautiful sitting out there in the middle of this low-income neighborhood. But as they began to walk away, it dawned on the pastor that what they had done was they had kind of built a monument to their effort. But as they walked by, they noticed drug addicts who needed to know how to overcome their drug addiction. And they saw children who needed parents to love them. And they saw people who needed to learn how to read so they could go get another job to be able to make more to provide for their family. They had totally missed what it was really all about. And I think that we've got to be willing to look for opportunities to go that go beyond just you know, dumping something in a community that it really doesn't need. What is it that you and I and our church, what are things that we can do that help us not just go in and just, you know, give them something that will be temporary, but something that will be lasting? How do we do that? See, if you want to get me excited, start talking about some projects that not just give something material, but something that helps us be able to go beyond that and build relationships and build the opportunity for us to then share Jesus with them because so to meet their greatest need. See, we can't go in and do for somebody something they can do for themselves. We don't want to take that away from people. Why would we want to do that? Parents, don't do that for your kids. Don't do for them what they can do for themselves. Let them learn. We've got to be able to do that. But we certainly have to be able to empower them then to do more than what they can do. And those are the things. That's what we can be part of. We're called to serve others, not save them. We're called to relate with people, not rescue them. And number three, we're called to reach out and not down. To reach out and not down. See, I found myself, that's as I described my encounter in Kenya, it was, I kind of went in there with a reach down mentality. I didn't call it that. I didn't, wasn't really thinking of it that way, but really I was going to reach down to them to help them rather than reach out to them and help them. I learned a great lesson that you can't treat other people that like you've got it all figured out and that they need you. Because they don't need us. They need Jesus. And he can get there a whole other way than us if we're not willing to take him there. Never look at someone as lower than you. Never put them down. Never do it. We have to go in there making sure that people understand, hey, listen, I'm poor too. I'm a struggler too. I may have more material than you, but inside, I have the same need for you. I love what Brené Brown said. She's an author. She wrote this. She said, we've divided the world into those who need help and those who offer help. The truth is, we are both. We've defined it by how Americans look at it. We've defined it by that material category. But in the end, we all need help. And any of us are often just a paycheck or two away from needing some of the help that everybody else, that those other people that we like to look at and call them, that they're getting. We might be at the same place material as someone else, but listen, inside poverty, we all have the same hole, the same need in our soul, and that's for Jesus. And so we never need to look at anybody else. We always need to reach out and not down. Never put them down because they're not who we think we are. You see, today we have this opportunity to neighbor our neighbors. If we're going to learn how to neighbor them, then we've got to be able to take what we've heard and be able to put it into practice. To not just, you know, to not go and try to save somebody, but just to go in and serve them. To not go in there and try to rescue them, but just go in and relate to them. Build a relationship. And then to not go in there and reach down to them, but just reach out to them. In a few weeks, we've got an opportunity coming up called the Big Serve. And it's an opportunity for us to do things for our community that help people who can't help themselves. Projects that need to be done, painting, you know, repairs on their houses, and maybe their car is broken down or whatever it may be, but we're looking for opportunities to go in there and help people do what they can't do for themselves right now, and not just to save them for the moment, but then to build a relationship with them so that then we can have the opportunity to share Christ. And that's going to be coming up later in September, and we want you to be able to be a part of that. Actually, it's in October, second week of October, I think. And so you're going to be hearing more about it. And so you're going to have an opportunity to not only provide projects for us to do, you're going to be able to be involved in them. This is not for us to say, hey, can you go help somebody else, and us not go help somebody else too. This is for us as a church to be able to do together, to pool our resources and pool what we have to be able to then go and minister to people who can't help themselves, but then not for our glory, not for us to say that we did it, but for us to be able to then just know that somebody's received something that we were meant to be the ones to give, and now they're not struggling where they are, but they can then be empowered to move on. And so if you know of something like that, if you know of a project that needs to be done, let us know. And we'll explore it and figure out what we can do and all of those things. But that's going to take us stepping up. It's going to take all of us that are willing to use what we have to do it. It may take finances, but it's going to take a lot of time and effort, I believe, more than anything, for us just to go and love people and help them where they are. And so you got to make a decision. Are you willing to be part of that, or are you just willing to just stand back and watch everybody else? Now, there's a lot of roles to play. Some of us physically can't get out there. I get that. But you can certainly be part of a prayer group or something that you want to do that doesn't take that kind of effort. It's going to take prayer, and it's going to take all of the other things that you can do. And so are we willing to empower the poor? Are we willing to go and find things that we can do that don't just throw money at projects, but then go out and actually use it to help people become better than they are? Are we willing to be involved in that? I believe if we call ourselves followers of Christ, then we should be. Jesus said that we need to be able to do that. We need to do the things that he commands, and that's certainly one of those things. In fact, the scripture says, how can the love of God reside in you if you have it and you can't give it, and you're not willing to give it? So today, our next step is this. Are you willing to be involved in what God has next for us as a church in empowering our community, empowering those in our community to move beyond poverty, to move beyond this mindset? Are you willing? Here's what I want you to do. When you came in today, you received a couple of things, a program, and you received a connection card and a giving envelope. And so I'm going to ask you, every one of us today, to take out that connection card. Put your name on it. Now, I'm going to ask you, if you're willing to do it, just check it. Check yes, today's next step. I'm willing to be part of it. And then we're going to pull those together, and we're going to begin to sort things out, and we'll begin to communicate more of what's happening, and so that you can then be part of it. So I'm going to ask you right now, just take those cards out and get ready to be and decide what you want to do with it. Maybe today you're here and see, maybe the love of God isn't in you because you've never come to a place to accept that love. And today you need to know that he does love you, and that he loved you enough that he sent his son Jesus to die on the cross for you, to pay the price for your sin and for my sin, for all the sins of mankind. But then he did it specifically for you so that you could be forgiven of your sin and set free. And he was taken off the cross, buried, and on the third day was raised again, so that we are not only forgiven of our sin here, but we can understand what forever is, because we can understand resurrection and know that we can live for eternity in his presence. Though we may die here, we can certainly live in his presence. That's the promise that he gives us. Maybe today you just need to accept that for the first time. Maybe today you just want to be part of what's going on, and you want to serve here in our body, then that's awesome. Write that on your connection card and we'll find a place for you. Maybe today you need to just recommit. You know, you're reminded that you've not done much to help empower the poor. You've not done much to have pity on people that are in that mindset. And so maybe today you just need to recommit your life to Christ and move on to that. What is it that you need to do today to take a step further and closer to Christ? You walk. Let's pray. God, we thank you today that you bring us here together, God, not just as a group of people, but God, as a body. God, as a church that you've established here to accomplish things, to see this community changed because of who you've put in this place. No one is here by accident, God. You've drawn us here because we together make up this body called You Are a Community Church. And God, you have opportunities for each of us to be involved, whether we can just pray, whether we can put hands on things, whether we can give, whether we can, God, be involved in just serving some way. We're all here for that reason. And so, God, today I pray for those that need to make a decision to accept you for the first time. God, may they do it now and just confess their sin. God, acknowledge your son Jesus, that he died for them on the cross, and God, then to acknowledge that he was buried, raised again, and God, that they can be forgiven and set free for eternity, that he came to set us free. God, whatever it is you need to do in our lives today, I pray that you would do it right now.